Live and direct, you are tuned in to the Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680, broadcasting live out of the Sanctuary Hypocrisy, that is Chi-Town, Chi-Rac, Drillinoy. It is the day after Easter, April 17th in the year of your Lord, 2017. Bro Diallo Show, I appreciate you. Appreciate your appreciation of me. Let's jump in with both feet. Bro Diallo Show. Hey, good morning, everyone. Of course, I suppose I would be remiss if I didn't start off with the Stevie Steve situation. And, you know, there is, now, in 2017, we do have a significant count of black mass shooters. And what's most interesting is that when you look at the emergence of black mass shooters and mental illness in general, is that their target and their victims seem to be very tightly tied in with their ideological stance. Because now you can't really, you know, simply denounce this as, oh, just mental illness. Because something you will find if you look at mental illness across society is that mental illness is not a disease like other diseases. Meaning that if you contract metastatic cancer in your liver or pancreas, you can go to India, Pakistan, Rwanda, Kentucky, you can go to any country, state, region, and that cancer, if it's not treated, is going to progress the same. Same thing with rabies. When you have a viral, that metastatic cancer, that's more of a condition that could be caused by a number of things, genetic, radiation, environmental exposures. But once you contract it, once those disease processes begin, it plays out the same, no matter where you are. The same thing with rabies. And having, you know, had rabies shots at one time in my life, it's not pleasant. Oh, my goodness. But hey, when you grow up in places like Missouri, I know you city folks are like, oh, rabies. Yeah, rabies is still with us. It's still a significant issue. And when you're in them backwoods, it's a risk, you know. And I told my wife, my big city wife, before we even moved to Missouri, she didn't listen, though. She's like, this country boy don't know what he's talking about. And I was like, listen, there's some things. Before you move to the backwoods, you should know some things. But that's a different story. But if you contract rabies, whether you're in Nigeria, United States, Panama, Yugoslavia, it doesn't matter. It plays out the same way. The same methods of contraction, the same methods of transference, the same treatments, essentially. Basically, the same treatments that work for one person work for another. And that's a viral infection. Well, AIDS is the caveat to that. I'm not going to get in. I'm going to have to get Brother Keaty back in. Because, you know, I've been talking about this AIDS thing since 1992. But I didn't bring my tinfoil hat, so I'm not ready to go into the conspiracy corner. But I need to get Brother Keaty. I got to look up when World AIDS Day is and have him run down the science on that. or you can look up Brother Keaty's research and writings on AIDS. But AIDS is one virus. The HIV, human immune virus, is the one virus that seems to have cultural biases and cultural manifestations. AIDS in Africa is not the same AIDS you find in Atlanta. AIDS afflicting the black community is not the same AIDS that seems to be afflicting the white community. It spreads differently, it diagnosed differently, and it manifests differently. Go figure. But beyond that, generally when you look around, diseases behave the same way. But mental illness, which is a legitimate disease, and there are even bioneurological, biochemical markers for disease, where you can take a group of people who have certain manifest disease, mental illness process, and you can do an MRI scan of the brain, and you'll see that certain parts of the brain are more active than other certain parts. Other certain parts are much more subdued. There are certain hormonal or chemical compounds that you can tap and screen for that are either there in overabundance or very, very low. Very, very low estrogen or testosterone can lead to certain psychological behaviors or behavioral patterns. So one thing we know about mental illness, it's not necessarily a universal thing. Like a virus, a bacterial infection, or, you know, some other type of metabolic disease process. Obesity, thanks to, you know, globalization and the fine food-like substances that come attached to some, you know, well-recognized corporate logo, because now it has gone global. McWorld. Now, morbid obesity, the same process. Even if you reach obesity, you know, you live in an Islamic country and you don't eat pork, but if your obesity comes from eating over too much beef and not enough exercise or too much shellfish, whatever, it's the same process. Has the same impact on your muscular skeletal system, same impact on your endocrine system, same impact on your interstitial fat. It's the same no matter where. A morbidly obese Arab, a morbidly obese Chinese individual, a morbidly obese African, or a morbidly obese member of the African diaspora. Is that redundant? Shouldn't I just say member of the African diaspora? Do I even need to say obese? I mean, y'all knocking on 70% obesity rate. Come on. Come on, people. Go vegan, something. But anyway, I'm saying that to say that mental illness, even if you have identical mental illnesses, where an individual can be diagnosed with the same mental illness, it will manifest itself differently in different nations. In some nations, a person, you know, have much higher rates of suicide, places like India and China, where a person is much, much more likely for a myriad of mental issues or stressors, or is more likely to harm themselves. It's very rare. You go to Japan, gun violence is very rare. Japan can have fewer gun incidents of gun homicides they will have fewer in a full year. U.S. can have more shootings in a day than a nation, an entire nation with millions of people, can have in a year. And some people like to play out, well, the availability of guns, which is true. The United States is almost standalone at this point in the saturation of guns. But then you have nations, you know, like Switzerland, where there is not only an abundance of guns, but just about every citizen is trained on gun. Also, when you go to the colony of Israel, the settler colonial state of Israel, I mean, can we call it a nation? But when you, excluding the occupied territories, it's like everybody has a machine gun in Israel. Every teenager is conscripted into the military and is trained with assault rifles and allowed to carry their assault rifle. They have very little intra-group homicides, but I guess they have an outlet. They have the West Bank and Gaza Strip, where they can, you know, have a ongoing outlet for their homicidal aggression. So, but that is a unique situation as well. But my bottom line is, mental illness is a cultural phenomenon. How it manifests, how it plays out, not the fact that everybody has crazy. As Dick Gregory said, everybody got crazy people. And we have a right to have crazy people in our race like everybody else got crazy people. So everybody has. And, you know, if you're sensitive or if you're, you know, well-versed on the lingo for mental health and mental illness, maybe you don't like words like crazy. But I'm using what they call layman's terms and layman's language. So you can call in if you want to give us some of the more scientific jargon, 312-985-7834. But my concern is, you know, the accuracy and the ability to articulate the point more so than, you know, people are real focused on having the right terms. But, you know, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. So we ain't crazy people, mentally ill people, loonies, you know, people afflicted with the afflicted, emotionally, psychologically, neurologically afflicted individuals. And we notice that it's a cultural phenomenon, meaning that the society that you were born into, that nurture you, that has the primary influence on you, is going to dictate not whether or not necessarily you get mental illness, but there is an element of that some societies drive their citizens crazy or their subjects crazy, you know, through certain types of stressors and markers, certain behavior patterns that are rewarded and encouraged and other behavior patterns that are discouraged do lead to psychological, neurological disruptions. But as I said before in many shows, which I always have to articulate because I don't think we stick with this point strong enough, human beings are the most socially oriented beings on the face of this earth. When you isolate us from other people, we not only do we start to have psychological deterioration, our heart starts to literally break. You can literally die of a broken heart. Your respiratory system and your circulatory system, which is your heart, which is the circulatory pump, and your arteries and your veins, you know, which are two systems. One carries oxygenated blood, non-oxygenated. It's just they call it the circulatory system. It starts to deteriorate for nothing other than lack of human contact. There have been many studies done on individuals who have faced long-term solitary confinement, which unfortunately there's many subjects to be studied from that, because the United States has a real hard-on for putting especially black political prisoners in solitary confinement, isolating them, not allowing them any other human contact, shut-ins. So we're very socially oriented, and I know there's a lot of rhetoric about do you, get yours, but there is no individual, and there is no true individual in this world. Any true individual is dead before they learn to walk or talk. So we're all socially interdependent. We're all socially connected. And if those social bonds are not established early on, an infant, they have found, can literally die from lack of contact. Meaning that that child could have all the necessary food, all the necessary environmental conditions, all the necessary everything for life. But if you don't touch it, if the child doesn't feel your flesh against his, you hear your breath, your breathing, if the child does not have human contact, it will die. And I know we like those sci-fi movies where they show robots birthing the child and then the child is shipped off in a pod somewhere to be raised in a baby farm. That's just not workable, because human beings, maybe they will bioengineer some type of human that can thrive that way. But right now, you know, being the primates that we were, being primates when we were very low on the food chain, we didn't have the best claws, you know, we didn't have the sharpest fangs, we didn't have the strongest muscles, we weren't the best climbers, we weren't the fastest runners, and we couldn't fly. We were pretty much destined to be low on the food chain, but we had two assets. We only focus on one, but we had two assets that allowed us, and from the West, and I know this is a Eurocentric perspective, but allowed us to be at the top of the food chain. We're really not. I mean, bacteria, microscopic creatures are consume us and beat the hell out of us all the time. Things you can't even see with the naked eye are higher on the food chain than us. But that's another discussion. I'm just saying, one of the things that we had was our intellect and then our social bonds. Our ability to be empathetic to each other, to cooperate with each other, to share with each other, to make up for other people's deficits and to allow people to make up for our deficits, being social. The fact that we had very, very, very strong social bonds and connections. And as time went on, the human beings that were able to form social bonds and sustain social bonds were the ones that went on to reproduce, had the highest probability to survive, and then the highest probability to pass on their genetic traits. Whereas human beings that were more individualistic, isolation, do you player, in a more primitive time, back in great grand, great, 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 grand, 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 grand ancestor Lucy out of Ethiopia, those do you players, the individualistic, psychopathic individuals, had a lower chance of survival and therefore a lower opportunity to pass on their genetic traits and psychological inheritance. Excuse me. So anyway, let me just come out of that. I'd like to revisit that, but I mean, I want to get back to the fact that human beings are socially oriented, socially dependent, socially connected, and socially driven. So if you take an individual who has the identical mental illness or identical personality traits, and you put him or her in different societal conditions, those societal conditions will have very strong impacts, not necessarily cure, but some conditions can help them to better cure those ill issues. Some conditions can help, will exacerbate, make them much worse. And some will simply neutralize them. Or it can be to a point where a society is so pathological where the sickest people, Trump, will rise to the top of that society because the society has turned those psychological defects into assets. A really good documentary called The Corporation, it's over a decade old now, but they talked about how psychopaths, how the U.S. economy, the corporate economic structure favors psychopaths. Because people who aren't psychopathic have a lot of trouble of being integrated into that culture and then thriving and getting to the top of that culture. But if you exhibit the characteristics of a social or psychopath, then you're well primed to do what needs to be done to thrive and advance within corporate culture. And I think history, you know, of the CEOs, investment bankers, and so on down the line, pretty much plays that out. It plays it out. But back to this phenomenon of the mass shooter. It's a uniquely Western and a uniquely American phenomenon for people to go on shooting sprees. You have the socializing and then the environment, which, you know, easy access to guns and ammo, logistics, blah, blah, blah. Then you have another thing, an ideological perspective. Mark Essex, is probably the most famous mass shooter, even though he was preceded by generations of mass shooter. Professor Mackey had this article called Crazy Niggas. And it basically talked about black men who had gone on shooting sprees. And he told this one black man in the south of the Mason-Dixon line, of course, who worked really hard all his life. He was a sharecropper. And forgive me for the lack of details, but, you know, just have faith. I mean, we just came up out of Easter. Just have faith, because I'm basically retelling a story that I heard over 20 years ago. But, you know, long story short was, a man took a pair of fine shoes. A black man had a pair of fine shoes. And he took them into town. He was a rural farmer, worked really hard, saved up, got himself a pair of nice shoes. And back then, you know, good pair of slacks, nice pair of shoes. I mean, that sometimes could be your only, you know, treasured possession for sharecroppers. Other than that, it's broke iron shoes and overalls and hard work. But anyway, the man had a really nice pair of shoes, and we didn't have mass consumption. So if you had shoes, you generally got them repaired if there was an issue. He took his shoes into a cobbler, a white man, racist white man. That's redundant, too, at this point, right? And the white man took his shoes. He comes back for his shoes and says, "Sir, I'm ready to get my shoes. I brought in for a repair." And, of course, the white man said, "What shoes, boy? Get out of the store, nigga." So the brother leaves, comes back, gives him one more chance. Like, "Listen, you know, give me my shoes." "Nope." So, of course, this one incident wasn't it. But anyway, the brother came back, went on a shooting spree. And went on 3, 4, 5 different shooting sprees. You know. Or then, and it's now they don't call them mass shooters. Now they call them rampage killers. And probably the most honored rampage killer is, you know, Nat Turner. So brother's been taking heads in this country, you know, for quite some time. But you'll find that their ideological orientation pretty much guides their target. You have people, Nat Turner, Mark Essex, Colin Ferguson. You know, you can look him up, the Long Island Railroad shooter. And Colin Ferguson was a mass shooter. He had a manifesto. And in his manifesto, he talked about the racism in New York. And he ranted on and on and on about how everything, just like every element of the society, was there apparently to him as an immigrant, as a black African diasporan immigrant. Every aspect of the society was there to degrade black people. Even how they didn't clean up and pick up the trash in the black community where they kept the white community clean. And how the trains didn't even run on time. It's like the trains were always broke down. Like they just couldn't keep the trains running when it came to Bushwick, East New York, you know, Bedford-Stuyvesant. Now I know some people are like, "What? Those used to be black communities, predominantly, exclusively black communities." I worked in Bushwick. I lived in Bronzeville. You know, I lived off Sterling Place, off Eastern Parkway, Utica Avenue. That used to Church Ave. That was all black. I went to school downstate, right off Lexington. All that used to be black. So if you are, you know, post 2000 New York, I know you think, yeah, I'm talking about a whole nother reality. But he talked about that. And so he said, you know, "I'm going to go on a commuter train where these wealthy white people would catch the train into the city, extract resources, you know, enjoy all the opulence of the city. And then they'd get on the Long Island Railroad and go back to their mansions." So he walked on there with a pistol and started targeting white people. Colin Ferguson, you know, and they jumped him and held him down for the police. They took him alive and he went to trial and acted as his own lawyer. But it was very obviously, it was a circus. Because he was very obviously not all there in the head. And again, okay, I don't have the diagnosis. He was crazy. But his madness was married to his ideological stance, his ideological understanding. So he targeted what appeared to him on the surface to be wealthy white people, the people he identified as the explorers. Same thing with Mark Essex. He went on the rooftop targeting law enforcement. Because he said that's the source of oppression. Those are the frontline troops in the agenda to suppress and degrade, dehumanize black people. So he got up on the roof and started sniping white folks. And a lot of them are veterans, too. That's another thing. Mark Essex was a Navy veteran. And so then we have more modern mass shooters like Dorner. Dorner was actually a right winger. He didn't have any fundamental animosity to the state. He didn't have any animosity based on the ongoing systemic racism and racial aggression. His thing was basically he was a careerist. He wanted to be part of the systems and institutions of white domination, patriarchy, and oppression. He wanted to be, he was a military man. Very proud of being a mercenary, a capitalist mercenary. He was then wanted to be an LAPD of all things, wanted to be a cop. You know, and he was fully ready, prepared, and enthusiastic. That's why, you know, it's crazy to me that a lot of black nationalists try to adopt Dorner. Like, but then they try to adopt Cosby. You know, any black man would, you know, and that's why I question the motives. I don't really think these so-called black nationalists are really about African liberation. They just want to displace the current corrupt power system with the black version, or share power with the current oligarchs. But I don't really think they want a fundamental transformation of social relations, economic relations, gender relations. They like the macho man, you know, on top, and everybody underneath the patriarch. I think they want a black version of that, which to me is not liberation. You know, you can look at decolonization of Africa. You put European colonizers, and then you remove them and put black colonial administrators. They're not even colonizers because it's their homeland. But you have white colonizers, and then you say, okay, let's have a black administrator of the white colony. Like Obama's presidency was basically how Africa has been run for the last 75 years, since the process of decolonization started in Ghana and spread to the rest of so-called sub-Saharan Africa. You know, it's just black administrators of white policies and programs and infrastructure. And that's not what we're going for. But that's what Darner was all about. You know, and so he targeted, you know, women were his victims, other black people were his victim, whereas Mark Essex, it was seen, and Colin Ferguson and Nat Turner. And I know I'm jumping wide swaths. I mean, if we need a chronology of black rampage killers, you'll find that their ideology. And then you have the two most recent, the San Bernardino minister. He was a Christian minister. Now, of course, I see a lot of people going at, in fact, black men. I mean, in fact, one of the first items I've read this morning was a feminist talking about black men, you know. And as I'm saying that the society, it's top down in terms of influences. The society then influences top down, where I guess she thinks it's from the bottom up, where individual black man dictates and governs and directs the behavior of all other black men and what, I don't know. But these last two, they will condemn, okay, he was a black man, but that's not all he was. You know, San Bernardino shooter, the guy who shot his, she was his wife, and a couple of her students, very small children, 8, 9-year-olds. He was a minister. He posted very often about how God works in his life, how God influenced his life. He was a preacher. He gave testimony. Just typical preacher mess. And this other guy, he was a Muslim. And he was also, I don't know, I don't know Bleaks or Grax, black Greeks, Greek blacks. He was a frat boy. I never hear that term anymore, frat. Do they still say frat boy? I don't know. I don't know that world. There's nothing that ever attracted me. I remember when I was in high school, they brought some black frat dude up to the school to inspire us to be all that we can be. I don't know what the hell that was about, but it was my senior year, and they pulled all the black males out of class. Bishop Hogan High School. They pulled us all out of class and brought us into the larger common room. This is really, really large lecture hall type room. And only in relatively small school. And they had some dude stand up there, and he was supposed to tell us about college. He was a young college student, and he was, you know, and it was our senior year, and of course we were all expected to go to college. And dude was supposed to tell us about entering college, what to expect for college, and what we need, what skills we needed to carry forth, and what changes we need to make as young men in order to be successful. All dude was, God did was sit up there and talk about, it was his frat, and try to recruit us to pledge his frat. And I'm sitting there, and then I'm like, well, at least I'm not in class. So that's a win. But I have to listen to that nonsense, so it balances out. But anyway, after his long talk, he was kind of sitting, you know, the cool teachers, they sit on top of the desk. They don't stand behind the desk or stand up. They like sit up on the desk with one leg up and one leg on the ground. You know, that whole, hey, I'm cute. I'm not like the other adults. I'm cute. And so I walk up to him and I ask him, I'm like, dude, you know, you sat here for almost 2 hours, which I appreciate because, again, I'm not in class. and telling me about a fraternity. He's like, yeah, man, it's changed your life. I'm like, but the Greeks, black people ain't Greeks. And so I just started asking a few questions about what little bit I knew about Greek history and how it related to African history and how it relates to black people here and now. And then even the history that Greek fraternities and sororities were some of the most aggressive opponents of school integration. If it was up to Greek culture and Greek societies, there wouldn't be no black folks in higher education teaching or learning, or I mean, at best we could mop the floors and serve the food like we still do at many of these schools like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, you know. And I'm like, so, and then I was like, also, Greeks are just a pale imitation of Egyptians. So why not have Egypt? See, I didn't know Kemet. This was in the early. I wasn't as sophisticated in the black lingo. I'm like, why not just have Egyptian fraternities? Why not? And ultimately, the dude got frustrated and said he's going to punch me in the face. He's like, you diss my frat again, I'm going to knock you out. I'm like, whoa, that's a gang. You know, that's the kind of things, the kind of threats I would get when I would go and ask very simple questions. I would ask of the gang members. But anyway, the dude said he was going to knock me out. And of course, you know, when you're like 17 years old, a 22-year-old looks like a giant. You know, like, whoa, this dude is going to knock me out just because, you know, I'm asking questions. But anyway, that's the closest I ever got to Greek life in my youth. I never once entertained the thought of you know, letting people spit in my mouth and strip me naked and beat me and chase me through woods and paddle me and have me self-humiliate myself, eat raw eggs and spit them into the next dude's mouth. And, you know, I'm like, nah, I wouldn't join. I ain't join. Even a club I wanted to be in, I wouldn't join, you know, to degrade myself. But this dude, this current mass shooter is a Greek and a Muslim. And so I guess we got the Christian, we got the Muslim. I guess the next shooting spree, if things work out, will be, you know, a black Hebrew. But we already had a black Hebrew mass killer that kind of flew under the radar, actually. But I guess he killed one of his, or two of his wives and some of his offsprings. I guess he kept it, but my point is, if you look at their ideological orientation, going back to Nat Turner, Mark Essays, Colin Ferguson to the San Bernardino, and now the Cleveland shooter and other, their ideological orientation, like in America, if you snap, randomly killing mass number of people is definitely on the table. That's the kind of culture. This is a kill culture. This is a thrill kill culture. We associate guns with sex. You know, there are videos of advertisements of women in bikinis and thongs shooting off high-powered weapons, and people like masturbate to this stuff. All of the biggest stars, you know, kill, kill, kill. Schwarzenegger, you know, rip your arm off and beat you to death with your arm. All the biggest blockbuster movies are all explosions and gunshots. Then we have, and when we think about outer space, it's us killing aliens, or aliens killing us, or we all killing each other. This is a thrill kill culture. I mean, there hasn't been a day without a homicide since the Pilgrims hit Plymouth Rock. They have murder, and that is a big part of what made America successful. And, you know, whenever there was the economic downturn, whenever there was a depression, a deep recession, whenever there's this down slump in the economy, go to war. Turns things right around. It reinvigorates the economy. You know, a president's very low in the polls, drop the mother of all bombs. All of a sudden, there's an upswing in the polls. He's presidential. He's respectable. We forget about the pussy grabbing and all of his other lunacy because he dropped bombs. This is a kill culture. This is a death culture. Or Derek Jensen said it best. Western culture has a death urge. So it's very much on the table. That if someone has a psychotic episode, a psychological breakdown, or whatever else, that one of the options is to kill indiscriminate people and go on a rampage. That's just one of the options. And then the society puts everything at your disposal to do it. It's very easy to get everything you need to carry out this action. You know? So, but that doesn't necessarily say, who will you target? Because even if that's a case and that's on the table, there's still a lot of different demographics in this society. Black people, black women, black elderly, black gays, white people, white elderly, white children, white, you know. And it seems that most indiscriminate killers are not truly indiscriminate. They do target, you know, and they do target particular groups. They do target particular demographics. You know, Mark Essex targeted the police. Colin Ferguson targeted wealthy white people, Wall Street types. Dorner targeted his coworkers. He targeted his peers, which is actually rare. He was supposed to target other policemen, other the brass of the LAPD. He targeted his peers. But the San Bernardino and the Cleveland, Ohio shooters, they targeted women, black women. And I'm sure both of these guys have drove right past cops and Asian store owners and all kind of other people that we like to say are parasites in our communities, oppressors in our communities, enemies of our people, went right past them. You know, and when I, you know, from time to time, someone will threaten me on social media, and I always have to ask, especially if they're generally of a black nationalist slant, I'm gonna get you. Or, you know, here's a better example. Let me not even talk about me. Malachi York. When Malachi York confessed to sexually abusing children and was given a life sentence in prison, of course, a lot of his followers, just like all of these other cult leaders, there's nothing their leader can do. It's like Trump said, I could kill somebody in the middle of Times Square. I could shoot somebody and my people will still vote for me. That's the whole, that's the good thing about being a demagogue, being a cult of personality. I mean, Obama, but you know, it ain't just don't let, oh, look at people who follow these leads. No, if you, Obama's the same thing. Obama went on an 8-year murder spree, 8 years of loyally and unflinchingly serving the oligarchs of the world, advancing the systems and institutions of white, and so y'all still worship him. So don't think you're not part of this. But I'm sorry. Let's back it up. Let me just kind of wrap this up because, man, time is not our friend. Time is not our friend. But anyway, these guys target black women. Oh, wait, I was going to talk about York. Let me not drop that because it's relevant, I think. But anyway, he was incarcerated. His followers were like, yo, he's innocent. He's being targeted. The system's trying to bring him down. He's Fred Hampton. York is Malcolm X. York is Dr. King. He's one of these great black men who the system has brought down. I'm like, okay, if you want to believe that, go for it. But then they had an interview. I heard this interview on Baba Keady's Living in Black Radio. And there was another guy who... And I'm not lying, I swear. If I got to back this story up, I can definitely back this one up. There's a guy who used to go around. I think he was out of St. Louis. Baba Keady can back me up on this. And he was a UFO caller. He would call down UFOs. He would be, you know, and he'd done it. He'd done it on the news. He did it on Keady's show. He would go out and say, hey, UFO, whatever he did, he said, I have the power to call extraterrestrial beings, force them to manifest themselves. I am not lying. And so he was on the local news and he did whatever his thing was and he caught a UFO and the cameras point up at the sky and it was like, that is a flying object that we cannot identify. So technically it's a UFO. I'm not saying it's an extra, it's just because it's a UFO, it's unidentified and it's flying and it's an object doesn't mean it's from an alien source. That's people get that twisted. But long story short, he was telling about his UFO powers and to summon UFOs. And, you know, this is right after the tape of Dr. York confessing his crimes had been released. So anyway, he's like, yeah, he did it. Dr. York is a pedophile. Woo, 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 woo. Just run down, like just tore into Dr. York. And he was like, I'm speaking my own opinion. You know, let's put my UFO powers on the shelf for a minute. And let's just talk about this very influential figure. Some would say icon in the black cultural arena. Yeah, I think he's guilty and none of you don't touch kids. Woo, woo, woo. So one of Dr. York's at least 57 children and counting called into the radio and was like, yo, keep my father's name out your mouth, because if you continue to talk about my father, I'm going to come and get you. I'm going to come and do physical harm to you. And so, of course, the brother, you know, you call a brother out on the media, the brother was like, well, I wish you would. And, you know, it's all this chest thumping, you know, huffing and puffing back and forth. But the first thing that hit my mind was, you're going to go after some random nutbag. And maybe I'm going to regret calling him a nutbag, because the dude can call UFOs. Who knows? I might be abducted in my sleep. And we all know what the aliens do when they get their hands on you. So if a tractor beam comes down on me, I brought it on myself because I think this guy's a nut. But anyway, I'm like, why not the judge that sentenced your father, the prosecutor that prosecuted your father, hell, the bailiff that took him into custody, the warden of the prison that he's in, any of the CEOs. I mean, the arresting officer. There's a long list of people who are directly related to your father's apprehension, conviction, and incarceration. But and as his son, who's talking about you're going to avenge your father, you go after some random black person in the street who has an opinion versus these authority figures who are all white that I know of, who actually carried out the action. It wasn't just them sharing their thoughts, but them executing their thoughts. And that's the disconnect. Like, you ready to beat up on some black people, threaten black people, hound and harass black people for just sharing their views based on the evidence. But the judge goes home every night and you don't even think of them. And I'm not suggesting anybody does anything, because if my father was convicted of that, you know, I'd be on the side of the judge and the prosecutor and the bailiff and the sheriff and the arrestor and the CEO, warden, all of them. Because if my father did it, if he confessed to it, if he didn't do it, but he stood there and confessed to it, I'm like, that's when you don't confess that. I don't know, care what they do. You know, so that's how we do. Or to put it in a more poetic way, we got more funk for each other than we have for our oppressor. Our oppressor could beat the hell out of us, strip us naked and beat us in the street and throw us in the street. And then while we're walking through the street beaten and bloody, if we see a black person looking at us, what you looking at? And we want to fight the black dude. When you didn't throw any hands at the guy who put you in the situation to be looked at. I don't know. That is it. But I call that the plantation buck. Go look at the archive where I talk about the whole thing of where the plantation buck, the guy who was aggressing against other slaves, stealing from other slaves, threatening other slaves, brutalizing other slaves. But when Massa come, he turned into a little puppy kitten. And you see, go look at the series First 48. They'll literally be looking for some dude. Like, he shot up a man, killed the man's wife, killed the man's child, slit the dog's throat, terrorizing the neighborhood, burned down a bunch of houses. But then they apprehend this guy and they take him into the police precinct, sit him in a quiet little room with the Coca-Cola, and he's sitting there like a docile baby. And some fat detective will come in there. I don't know, not to diss fat people, but you know, the whole donut cop with a male pattern baldness, damn gun, you know, damn near falling off his hip. He's all sloppy, you know, jelly donut stain on his unironed armpit stained shirt. And he'll come there and flop down in the seat. Not a very intimidating figure. And was like, you know, you're in big trouble. And the guy doesn't even look at him. Doesn't even make eyes.
Yeah, I know. I just want, can I call, could you call my mama?
I'm like, dude, you was just the Rambo killer in the hood. Now they got you under some white authority and you're a puppy kitten. How does that happen? That ain't got nothing to do with you. You're just as strong. You're just as testosterone driven. I mean, if they catch this Stevie Steve guy alive, I guarantee you when they take him into custody, the killer in him will just dissipate. When your Lord and Savior, when Jesus appears to you in a halo and wings, and by halo, I mean policeman caps, and by wings, I mean a badge. We just melt, and all of our aggression, all of our hatred, even though the true source of our pain is standing before us, the pain, and that goes all the way back to the plantation buck, where we're so aggressed towards each other, you know, or don't let it be another man. But oh, even it, set aside another man, these cowards, they go after women. They go 10 times harder than on women. You go to the basketball court and you get punked. You like, it's my game. And they was like, sit your punk ass down. You ain't playing. And instead of stepping the dude, you'll go home and beat up on your wife or your girlfriend or your kids. Displaced aggression. We have become, I mean, they should put that in Olympics. Black folks, as a group, no matter where you are in the hierarchy, displaced aggression has become an art form for us. And it's not always just the man goes home and beat his wife after the boss man comes and say, hey, boy, let me rub your head for good luck, and humiliates and degrades you. So you want to compound that. You want to pass that on. You don't want it to just fester. Like the poem, A Dream Deferred, you're not going to let that fester in you. So you're going to find somebody identified as weaker than you. So the white man tears you down. You go down and tear down your wife. Your wife tear down the kids. The kid tear down the younger sibling. The younger sibling goes and kicks the cat. You know. And that, I mean, that's not unique to African people. You go to any stress pile. You go to Palestine. You go to Yugoslavia during the breakdown of the Soviet Union. You go to places, Indonesia. You find these same characteristics. It's not really unique to black folks, but that's who I'm talking about right now. And then you got somebody who has a breakdown. Like I said, just because you break down and then you have the how do you target? How do you determine who you're going to target? There is a new phenomenon of blame black womanism. And there are prominent black leaders who have made a career with trying to put all of our problems off on black women. And it's relatively new, but it has grown exponentially. Dr. Umar has made a career of blaming black women. Why do we have so many gays? Number one premise, gays are a problem. Gays are detrimental or an existential threat. Why do we have so many gays? Because we don't have fathers in the house. Why don't we have fathers in the house? Because these black women are so disagreeable. And then they turn it. And that's his. And people have given him over $1 million at this point, because he's got $500,000 in straight donations. And they just had homie here, Chicago, where black folks economically are suffering. Even though we've got a lot of black, wealthy blacks in this town, we've got a lot of extremely wealthy black folks in this town, they are more loyal to their class than their race. But that's a whole nother discussion. But the few black folks that are trying to do something positive, trying to be collective, trying to be nationalist, trying to do more than just have black individuals get theirs, but empower us as a community, we ain't got the resources other folks got. You know, and it's like every year they have this big Christmas ball, big elegant ball, this big fancy hotel, all these black folks showing up in limos and Rolls Royces and the fanciest ball gowns. That's what the wealthy black elites are doing, what the wealthy black elites have always done, pretend to be white people. But they only pretend to be white people in terms of opulence. They don't pretend to be white people in terms of power. They don't want white folks' power. They just want the cocktail parties and orgies and all that stuff. But they're not going to threaten power because their wealth is based on their subservience to power. If they try to buy NBC, if they try to get their own source of power, if they try to take over resources, if they try to buy NBC, we know what happens. So they're like, I don't want to buy NBC. I just want to stand in front of the camera, make this money, buy mansions, consumption. That's the only difference between the black elite and the black masses. Consumption capacity. Dr. Dre and Oprah, unfortunately, have no more real power than us, but they have the capacity to consume a lot more than we can consume. But if they get out of line, they will be splayed over the hood of cars in front of their mansion, just like you can be splayed over the hood of the car in front of your rental apartment. And they get reminded of that. They get reminded of that less frequently than we do, but they do get their reminders. But anyway, this city is poor. The conscious, cultural, pro-black, nationalist, pan-African community is impoverished. We don't have money to do anything. We've tried to open some cooperative enterprises. I see other people, you know, trying to build up the black mall, but everything's on the level of struggle. There's no real surplus of resources anywhere. But yet, on top of that, people are paying to fly in Dr. Umar, paying him to stay in a pretty decent hotel, I'm pretty sure. Probably not even the black-owned hotel here, but paying the hotel, give him a lecture. We're putting money in his pocket. He's on his way to struggle-ass St. Louis. I just drove through St. Louis. Emphasis on drive. You know, St. Louis has always been kind of a curious place to me. We always, well, let me not get into that. I'm just saying, he's about to go to St. Louis every year. He just said, he got on the thing in a poofball hat and said, yo, I stay touring. My calendar stay booked up. I'm like, are you a drill rapper now? What? Like, he's touring. That's what he does. But what does he say when he tours? He's like, you're suffering. Yeah. You're struggling. Yeah. You don't have what you deserve in life. Yeah. And your enemy, yeah, is who? The black woman. And the reason that that sells is because black men think, well, I could whoop the black woman. If the black woman, I could whoop her. Now, if he tells me my enemy is industrial capitalism, that's an intimidating enemy. I don't want to hear that. That might require me to step out of my own comfort zone. That might say, hey, I can't sit there and play Madden or play 2K or watch. I mean, it's based, it's the basketball playoffs. So I ain't going to tell you the institutions, the advertisers and the owners of the NBA. You're going to tell me that that's my enemy during the playoffs? Don't want to hear that. You're going to tell me the cops, they got guns and legal authority to kill me. Don't tell me they are my source of my problems. Don't tell me capitalism is the source of my problems, because I'm delusional enough to think that the next big idea, my next big investment. You know, we got black capitalists. Dr. Boyce Watkins telling us, you know, if we just spent our money right, we'd be free. Right? Even though white folks, they don't spend their money right. They make money. So if I had a printing press where I could print dollars and then dictate the value of that dollar, I wouldn't have to worry about spending it. Whatever. But I'm just saying. So if you tell me the capitalism is my enemy, if you tell me the United States government is my enemy, the CIA, FBI, Nation of Israel, if you're telling me all these people with nukes and power and real authority are my enemy, I don't want to hear that. If you're going to define an enemy for me, give me an enemy that I think I could whoop. These young kids sagging their pants. Yeah, I could take on these young punks from a distance. And the black woman is, yo, I could whoop a black woman. I ain't seen a black woman that could take me down yet. So these guys are prominent. Because they run around the country telling black men what they want to hear. And not just, and this is the topic, but the preachers do the same thing. You're suffering. It's the devil. Oh, it's the devil. Okay. Because if I tell you you're suffering, if I tell you your gout, your diabetes, that foot sore that won't quite heal up, is the source of your diet and lack of exercise. I'm not coming back to church. But if you tell me that it's the devil trying to test you, I'm coming back. You know, so if you're telling people that their enemy is somebody they think they can whoop, or telling them that your enemy is from a source that they can't truly touch, then they're going to listen. So I'm not saying the black demagogues, the black toxic black nationalists, the black Puritans, you know, but if I come to town and tell you, the systems and institutions of global white dominations are the problem in which we must target. We must organize and orient ourselves and put our resources for to dismantling the systems and institutions of white domination. That's the enemy. I'm not going to get very positive feedback. But if I tell you your enemy is young black kids, they won't pull their pants up and pay attention in school. That's the problem. Then you're most of the people who follow that nonsense aren't in school anymore, knowing damn well they didn't pay attention in school. But hey, it takes it off me. If I tell you your problem is black women, oh, I could whoop her. I'm willing to fight the black woman. I'm willing to have a march and call what? Yeah, the black woman getting abortions, legal abortions, is genocide. It's not industrial capitalism and it's toxic emissions. It's not the nuclear power and nuclear arms industry. No, that's not genocide. That's not omnicide. That's not destroying the ecosystem. It's black women exercising control of their reproduction. That's genocide. Or if I tell you the gays, oh, yeah. You know, I could whoop a gay dude. Sissies, they soft. They ain't that. Okay, the gays, women, and sagging pants on young people. Oh, and young girls and their weaves. Yes. So dudes make a lot of money and get a lot of influence going around. And then they have the black, what they say, the black straight pride movement and the black decency movement. Saying that black people were well-mannered. If we knew the difference between a solid fork and a dinner fork, if we had proper manners, if we behaved better, that's Bill Cosby's old hustle. Talking about we don't speak standard English, and we drop them G's when we say thang instead of thing. That's the source of it. So if you have a lot of black people who rise to prominence, You have a lot of black people who rise to prominence selling black folks on problems that ain't the real problems and solutions that ain't real solutions. And there's a lot of money in that. Whether I'm telling you it's the black woman is your enemy or whether I'm telling you there's a mothership from on high that any day now is going to swoop down full of black aliens or black Egyptians who flew into space only who had planned to come back and liberate us. If I'm selling you nonsense, if I'm selling you snake oil. But again, don't feel like I'm picking on black folks, because I mean, white folks just elected a president snake oil salesman who sold them bigger fantasies than Umar selling to the hood. But that's another discussion. But in any of these ideology, you're always going to have, first of all, your extremist, and then your outer fringe of the extremist. So you got a lot of racist white people on Facebook, social media, Twitter, nigger. But for every 5 million dudes that will type nigger on Facebook, but then be all intimidated and get out your way when he's walking down the street and hope to God that you haven't in any way found out he's the guy, you know, the same white boy that'll get online and talk about black people are coons and monkeys and then be the first one to buy Gucci Mane tickets when he comes to town. Then you have your Dylan Roofs or your Timothy McVeighs who are going to take it to the outer extreme. But everybody knows, as they say, these mainstream racists, these Fox News leads to Alex Jones. Alex Jones lead to things like the Turner Diaries and then Turner Diaries. So they, without that foundation, those outer fringe of the outer extreme levels, the foundation, the mainstream foundation, the dog whistle racist are the engines that drive the gym. They are the Dylan Roofs are the tip of the spear. And that's why you have to hold it accountable. It's the same thing. Even people, Islamic extremism. Islam is about peace. No, I'm sorry to say, you good Muslims are the foundation for which the so-called bad Muslims. To me, it's all Islam to me. Same thing. Christian fundamentalist. There's a guy, Hondus Breivik, that took a machine gun and killed a bunch of children. He's a right-wing Christian extremist, a white nationalist extremist. I mean, Christians kill. It's just the reason we don't look at Christian extremism the way, because Christian extremism comes in the forms of cruise missiles, aircraft carriers, nuclear bombs. The United States is a Christian extremist, and not only does it carry out more international aggression, it's the number one arms distributor of the world. So it facilitates and enables everybody else. That's Christian extremism, but you don't call it that. You call it diplomacy. So, you know, but I mean, I'm sure if the so-called Muslim extremist had the same level of sophistication, had the apparatus of the state and the infrastructure, they would also be carrying out more sophisticated. They wouldn't be doing low-level so-called terrorism. They'd do international diplomacy, international police action. But, you know, the Iraq war, that's Christian extremism. Afghanistan, Christian extremism. These are Christians. Donald Trump is a Christian. Obama is a Christian. Bush was an evangelical Christian. Let's go on back. Trump was a Christian. Obama, Christian. Bush, Christian. Go on back. Ford, you know, all the way back. George Washington, Christian. Christian fundamentalism, Christian extremism, Christian terrorism. So I it's all in the game, yo. But anyway, I'm way past the break. Not way, but I didn't do a proper break. AM 1680. But I don't know if I really got to this. But anyway, so you're going to have, if you have an undercurrent of racism, you're going to have extreme fringe of people who act that out. If you have an undercurrent of valid, conscious, cultural, revolutionary, nationalist misogyny, you're going to have the black men are going to start targeting black women and even black children and our elders. And they're going to start, black people are going to kill other black people because they're, and you got to bring this all the way back. And I can't tell you how many times I've said, you know, brothers are going to start going after black women. And this is just, and there it's targeted. And now a lot of times it's in this sensational way. And even when they don't kill black women, they'll say, well, the black woman is the problem, is the reason I'm killing you, the reason I'm killing other people, my mama, my girlfriend. And that is the direct, because if you go back and look at the black mass shooters from a decade ago, like I said, we've had rampage killers before. It's all about what's currently happening in society. During the civil rights movement, if a brother went on a rampage, he was targeting the revolution has come off the pig. Time to pick up the gun off the pig. If that's what's in the air, that's what's floating in the culture, when I snap, that's what I'm just going to pick up what's going on. You know, it used to be somebody go on a rampage during the Inquisition. You burn a witch. You burn a heretic. That's what was in. Nobody's burning witches and heretics now, because that's just not the code. So this is a societal issue. And I know there's an individual. I know a lot are going to be, oh, the problem is black men. So there's another side to that. But this is a societal issue. And Dr. Amos Wilson said that America is a pathogenic society and a criminogenic society, meaning that just the you could be a perfectly healthy person and you enter American society from grade school, compete, high stakes testing, under-resourced, you're an animal, you're nothing, you're dirt, you're great, you know, February you're great and you come from greatness for February, but all the rest of the year you're junk, you're dirt. And then you go to college, compete, tear people down, insecurity, insufficient funds. You go to the job. And as soon as you get to the job, you just spend 12 years in school, grad school, and they say, forget everything you learned in school. I'm going to teach you what I need you to know. Like, what? And so it's a pathogenic society. The environment's polluted. The water's toxic. The air is unfit to breathe. The food is unfit to eat. It's a pathogenic society. And as Gil Scott-Heron said, everybody ain't that strong. And I'm not even talking about thankfully. In fact, and that's what another thing, we're just saying somebody goes on a rampage and saying they're mentally ill. In fact, if you look at it statistically, the mentally ill have more to fear than the so-called mentally healthy people than we have to fear from them. There are more instances of people who are classified as psychologically healthy. Right? And they're doing harm to people who are suffering from mental illness. So if the person has mental illness, then they're dangerous. That's just not true. And I'm sorry. And, to quote Jay-Z, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. It's just like with the whole bathroom thing. When they were doing the whole bathroom, it's not really anything that's really on my radar. But, of course, everybody was clamoring, you know, men are going to be in women's bathroom. Women's going to be in men's. Oh, it's going to be a whole freaky deaky Greco-Roman orgy. Any day now. This is the downfall of society. You know, but you're a good person. But if a transgender woman or a transgender man is in a bathroom that they identify with, then that's just going to cause you to just go home, divorce your wife, and put on some spandex and leather and a ball gag and run up the street. I don't know what you would think that would, what the problem would be. But I just decided, let me just look at the numbers. And the instances of public bathroom harassment and attacks, it's the reality is transgender people and, you know, non-gender conforming people have more to fear from us healthy, normal people than they have to fear from us. There have been more instances of heterosexual, gender conformer, heteronormative, whatever. I had used just regular people, straight people, attacking people who do not conform. So let's say you have a person that says, well, I'm transgender, I'm gay or flamboyant or whatever. And they say, I'm just going to go with the social norm. And I have to go to the bathroom according to the gender that I identify, that I was born. So you have a dude in high heels and a makeup and a wig and a miniskirt, and he walks into the men's room. Now, your thought is, oh, if there's a little boy in there, he's going to scar that little boy for life. But the numbers are he's more likely to be attacked and harmed for minding his own business and exercising his own human and civil rights to be as, you know, freaky diggy as he wants to be. He's more likely to be harmed by us good God-fearing people than we are to be by him. And the statistics all the way down the line show that people who don't conform to gender are a greater threat to people who conform to gender standards, then don't. Take it as you will. But then we're told, oh, these gays, the gays are taking over. The gays are getting out of the gays. But men lie, Women lie, number don't. To quote the great now venture capitalist, Jay-Z. Jay-Z's a venture capitalist. You know what venture capitalists do? They go to some place like Nairobi and buy up all the water or land rights and then sell it back to the people at exorbitant cost. That's the kind of things venture capitalists do. They buy up the debt of Puerto Rico or Greece and then force them to close down public schools, mental health, and all that. That's now we're celebrating. Yeah, we're finally getting into the venture capital game. That's black progress. No, that's black regression. But that's a rabbit hole. Let's get out of it. Bottom line is, the person we need to point the finger of blame at is Stevie Steve. But we have to acknowledge the undercurrent and the San Bernardino. There's this argument that we shouldn't say people's names because they do it for acknowledgement. Goes back to Columbine. Remember Columbine shooters? The first, you know, like really, really well-known mass shooting event that or of this century of contemporary history. White folks been mass killing and mass shooting since Plymouth Rock. Fell on us. But Dylann Roof, they had already predicted what the movie script was saying. They were saying which actors they wanted to play. So they said we shouldn't give these rampage killers who seek attention the attention that they seek. So now instead of saying the guy's name, you say the Cleveland shooter. Instead of saying the other guy's name, you say the San Bernardino shooter. You know, that's not really my area of expertise. I mean, there's some merit there, but I'd have to look into it more. And so let's go with the San Bernardino shooter is responsible, fundamentally, basically responsible for his actions. But he was a Christian pastor. And now this Muslim Cleveland shooter, who is a Muslim and a frat boy, you have to look at who they are, the totality as a person. And then you have to look at the undercurrent. Yeah, Dylann Roof was responsible, but there's an undercurrent of racism. There's this ongoing mythology that black people are bringing down America, that we're taxing, that there are white people who to this day believe that America is almost, what, $30 trillion in debt because they kept giving welfare to black folks. Like the 16 million black people, that's enough to give every black person more than $2 million each. And as a person who grew up on welfare, we weren't living that good on welfare. And when you're on welfare, you still got to go to the food pantry. You still got to take up, you know, love offerings in the church from time to time. You still have to, you know, get secondhand hand-me-down. If you ain't living lavish on welfare, they keep you at starvation. And let me tell you something else. People on welfare work hard to sustain. Poverty is a hard lifestyle to sustain. It's a very hard lifestyle. You don't have assistance. Nobody helps you be poor. So you have to do all the work. Poverty lifestyle is a labor-intensive lifestyle. And if you haven't been poor, you don't understand. If you've been poor, but then a lot of people who've been poor and get a little something in life, get a little college, get a little money, they like to pretend that they were never poor and join the chorus of poor condemners. So, you know, but there's a lot of people who believe that. So that undercurrent of black dehumanization, blaming blacks, it's the blacks' fault, hate blacks, dog whistle, Fox News, Alex Jones, white nationalism, is essentially an accomplice to Timothy McVeigh's and Dylann Roof. And I'm saying it, the blame black womanism, these black women are genocide. Black women are the cause of every black man's problem. It's a real legitimate. I mean, just if you don't believe me, don't do this black woman is God and stuff, because sisters, if a brother is calling you a goddess or saying a black woman is God or queen, it's a trap. Don't fall for it. That's not a compliment. You know, if I need to get into that, I'll explain. It's a trap. If she doesn't say, hey, you're a human. Hey, you're better off to find a man and say, hey, the black woman is a proletariat. You're a working class struggler, and I am your comrade in the struggle. Get some dude that'll say that. Don't get no dude that like, you are a queen, you are a goddess, therefore you must be perfect. And if you're not perfect, that's a setup. It's a trap. But anyway, do you have an undercurrent? You know, there is billboards put up all over America by some people that were saying the most dangerous place in America for a black child is the womb of a black woman. Look it up. And like I said, if you don't believe me, go online and say, black women. Just say it, make it factual. Just say anything that is complimentary about black, that is not, because it's a pendular. It's either one extreme. Either the black woman is God, the black woman is a goddess, the black woman is a queen, or she's the scum of the earth. That's what you call the pendulum. So say something that is accurate and balanced about black women and see the kind of hatred you get. To see the kind of, they're going to call you a simp. They're going to attack your own manhood and your own motivations. They're going to accuse you of just trying to get vagina. They're going to accuse you, oh, you're just saying this because you want to get with the women. You only saying this. If you're saying good about a black woman, then you're either lying or you got some other angle you're playing. You can't just be sincerely complimentary of black women. And that's what will drive. So when I do snap, that's the kind of stuff. You still are a social being. You're still socially oriented. So that's what you're going to fall back on. You know? So we have to look at this overall current of anti-black womanism. Anyway, like I said, let's take a musical break. And then we'll come back with more of the Bro Diallo Show on Q4 Radio.
In a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. In the 50s, my mother, sister run go England. Now my mother gone America, she turn American. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. So you left Clarendon to go a Brixton, and you check settings cool in a Liverpool. But you know Powell didn't know that things would get a blow. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. And I listen the news and I get confused. A black man join the Ku Klux Klan. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. If you're white, it all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back, or you better attack. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. Now the fire a go burn and the blood a run. A time Big Ben really tumble down. And ta say him a go burn a chalice, but me say him should have burned down the palace. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. Your wife. When you're there, you say, hey, sir. When you go there, you say, hey, mighty little light, it's not good to stay in a white man country too long. It's not good to stay in a white man country too long. So them shoot Reagan, them shoot the Pope, them shoot after the Queen, and you take it for a joke. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay in a white man country too long. Blacks in England, what is your plan? Blacks in England, check the time. Skinhead them now, check them crime. Blacks in England, find your land. Cause it no good to stay in a white man country too long. It no good to stay.
stay in a white man country too long.
The dread of the control, international control, and throughout the world, universal field marshal, and a partial who played the white selection without objection.
Strictly rockers.
Rockers to rockers.
I look around, what do I see? mommy.
But daddy, mommy don't have no more money. That's why them come back for the TV.
Afrikaans be on the alert. Babylon, I treat you like dirt. All right. That was Queen Majida. Queen Majida. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And on the alert, pon the alert. Be pon the alert. And O Daddy. Preceded by the legendary, living legend, dub poet, Muda Baruka. It's not good to stay in a white man country too long. It's not good to stay upon a white man planet too long. Remix. Let me just say, I was just accused of engaging in Pan-African on Pan-African character assassination with my criticisms of Dr. Umar. But like I said, I see a lot of these Pan-Africans promoting capitalism, promoting patriarchy, targeting black gays, black women, black youth, and a lot of vulnerable black populations instead of, and I seldom hear them give any specific actions that can be taken against the systems and institutions of global white domination, even though even they will acknowledge that is the core of everything else. And then they also promote things that they don't themselves engage in. Like, I tell people, you know, if I'm advocating something, more likely than not, I'm doing that same thing to the best of my ability. And I'd be the first one to admit that if I come up short. I don't really project myself as the paragon of Pan-Africanism, the prince of Pan-Africanism. And then so I don't think it's character assassination. And noticed, I don't ever say, because he said Pan-African on Pan, I don't say that Dr. Umar isn't a real Pan-Africanist. Or anybody who, I don't really bespoke, because I'm told, you're an atheist, you're not a real African. And I'm always have titles taken away. I'm not really black, I'm not really a man, I'm not really African, I'm not really, I always have titles granted and denied me. So then Christians like, oh, that wasn't a real Muslim. That, I mean, the Christians say, oh, that molesting pastor, he wasn't a real Christian. Or that Muslim cleric who beat his wife, he isn't a real Muslim. I don't get into that. Who's real, who ain't. You know, that's for other people to decide. So if the brother say his mama named him Clay, if he named himself, the man named himself a Pan, then he's a Pan-Africanist. Now, I could say whether or not, you know, the relative effectiveness of his Pan-Africanism, the appropriate application and advancement of the agenda he claims to serve. But I don't consider it character assassination because it's based on fact. You know, I like to play Xbox. And if somebody says, you know, comes up with some philosophy saying, hey, video games are detrimental to the well-being or the advancement of our people, whatever they say. And they were like, he plays the Xbox. That's not really character assassination. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, so how, you know, how I spend my leisure time. Well, how I would like to spend my leisure time if I could get some of it. Dang. Anyway, I'm just saying. So if you got tears to cry, you think I'm bullying the prince of Pan-Africanism. Or let me tell you, if you don't be a prince, if you're above, you know, princes, they be getting guillotines and stuff. If you can't just take basic criticism, basic critique, and basic, I guess, hateration, then you shouldn't be a prince. Anyway, that's not what I'm there to talk about. I think that Christianity, Islam, and large segments of the black puritanical nationalist have created, because it definitely wasn't created by us, but have helped to legitimize misogyny and violent aggression against women, the inappropriate blaming or labeling women as the enemy. Social media has, you know, helped to spread. And I'm not an anti-social media person, obviously. I think people blame, because, I mean, there was just a sister. I know she was tongue-in-cheek, but she was just saying that social media is to blame for her laziness in writing. She says she no longer uses proper capitalization, proper punctuation, and even proper spelling. Have all gone by the wayside. And she blames social media. I'm like, you can't blame social media for that. Now, I'm not a stickler for writing, but I do, and I write in the vernacular which I speak. So I will write cuz, C-U-Z, instead of because, but I generally stick to most grammar rules that I know of. If I'm breaking them, it's mostly because of my ignorance. So you feel free to correct and mock me. So, you know, and I do, you know, try to use, sometimes employ capitalization where it shouldn't be, but it's all deliberate. But I'm not lazy in my writing on social media, whether I'm writing an essay. Wednesday, I'll have the details. I'm giving a talk on mental health and violence in Joliet. I've been invited down to speak in Joliet. So I will share that today on all the @Diallo Kenyatta social media. I'll get it up on my website. I just want to make sure I've got the details locked down. I just got the flyer. It's a decent flyer. So I'll be in Joliet. Any listeners from down there? I know our signal doesn't reach to Joliet, but I know the internet, worldwide internet, is still worldwide. You know, so get the word out. I'd love to see you. I've only driven through Joliet. I have been down there, not on my own. My wife actually was doing some academic research down in Joliet. But, oh, crap. Did anyone try to call me today? If you tried to call, call back. 312-985-7834. The lines are open if you want to call in our last 30 minutes. When I looked online, the first thing I saw, it was a self-proclaimed black feminist was using the Cleveland shooting incident to go in on black men, to level some legitimate criticisms against black men as a collective. I don't really think, you know, that just because somebody's saying black men this, black men that they're incorrect in their assessments. But one thing that I noticed as well is that Trump is dropping megaton bombs. Trump is murdering people. But you got to give it. Trump is on pace. Trump was, they tried to claim that Obama was a weak president, that he had no spine, that he wasn't respected by international leaders. That was the rhetoric. But the reality is Obama was a mass murderer. Obama was bomb hungry, bomb crazy. Obama had a bigger body count than George Bush, and George Bush had over 1 million. So Obama sustained and expanded the PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And I believe we did a basic show on the PNAC, because I think if you don't understand PNAC, Project for a New American Century, George Bush's 1,000 points of light back in 1993, the post-Soviet world order, if you don't understand that, then what's happening in Yemen, Syria, the Middle East, nothing will make sense to you. Well, I guess if you understand European imperialism and basic white aggression, then it'll make sense. But if you want to know this particular stage of it, you know, it works in stages, like syphilis or any other, you know, communicable disease. It has stages of progression. And this current stage that we're in, because before you had the Cold War, the post-Soviet world, after the breakdown of the Soviet Union, and there was only one superpower in the world, It's PNAC, Project for a New American Century. And when they say America, that's the world. When they say America first, that means white people first. But anyway, Obama put in that work. And that's why Obama is wind sailing with billionaires, because he earned that position. I don't think of another black person living at the height of the white opulence has earned it more than Obama. Nobody's more deserving to go windsurfing with billionaires. You know, to be on the most expensive yachts, to eat the most expensive food, to stay in the most elegant hotels. I mean, Obama earned every moment of that. $60 million, $30 million for you, $30 million for your wife. Obama's earning that. Now, if you could say Obama's balling out, Obama has forgotten us. Obama said, and they both said they were going to take a brief vacation, but their work hasn't done. They were still going to work on behalf of the people. They still consider themselves public servants. And here we are under the Trump era and the Trump regime, and they are personas non gratas. Now, and he's living lavish like he never lived before. And everybody's so upset. Trump is going to make money off of the presidency. Trump said, I'm going to be the first president to ever make money being president. When the Trump and when the Obamas in their first 4 years before his reelection had already increased his own considerable personal wealth by over 117%. I don't even know what the stats are now, because now he's in the private sector. We can't follow the money like we used to. He's able to sign contracts and keep confidentiality agreements. Before, you know, the government was more transparent. Even though Obama ran a very secretive and clandestine government, there were elements of transparency that we no longer have on the Obamas. But let me just say, they balling out and they've earned it. He's earned it. I mean, the Bilderbergs, the trilaterals. Wow, I just got shocked. NSA, wow. This never happened before. I just got a little electrostatic shock from it. Maybe it's my beard. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about Obama now. Let me just hum some gospels. Spooked me. Anyway, Obama has earned it. But anyway, Trump has got a lot to make up for, because Trump spent 8 years. He didn't just say Obama wasn't American. He wasn't a legitimate president, because I mean, he's black. So, of course, he isn't. You don't even have to argue that. Birth certificate, whatever. I don't care if Obama had a birth. I don't care if Obama produced a camcorder of his birth coming out of his mother's birth canal, waving two American flags and speaking American English with a Budweiser in his hand. And a pistol in the other and an American flag lapel stuck in his flesh. He would have never been an American because he's a black dude. There ain't nothing to prove. Can you prove you ain't black? But anyway, Trump also said he's a weak president. But he wasn't. He was a homicidal president just like every other president. He was more homicidal. And he gave more money to the military than any other president preceding him. Even presidents in wartime. Not also per capita, you know, figuratively and relatively highest military budgets, history of the U.S. presidents. So Trump talked all his jazz. Now Trump is in that same seat. So Trump has to play catch up. Trump is like, man, I got to kill people quickly. So right out the gate, 200 people right out the gate, dead. 200 people, Iraq, Afghanistan. More weapons to Saudi Arabia to kill people in Libya. Take the gloves off in Israel. I got to kill, because I got to show that my penis is bigger than Obama's penises. And how else do a president show his penis size? The size of the missile that I drop and the frequency of which I drop these missiles. So he's got a lot. Obama set the mass murder bar very high. The only thing is, we celebrated Obama. We thought Obama was dropping bombs for justice. And we know, and maybe he was. Obama was mass killing people, malnourished, impoverished, powerless people who were absolutely no threat to the United States. He was killing them in the name of justice. Trump is killing them in the name of, I don't know, racism. But the bodies are still dead. But I guess the people who saw the drone bombs, who saw that flash of light before they were obliterated, could be like, that's a black man signed off on that bomb. I'm so proud. If he had a child, that the child would look like me. Oh, if I had a child, it would look like a lot of those Africans and Middle Eastern sand niggas that I bombed. And people are proud of that. I don't know why. Integration is a mother. But now Trump been bombing. Trump has gone on a mass murder orgy. He signed an executive order saying that the CIA can now, Obama didn't allow this, but he said the CIA can now come up with their own military missions, completely independent of the Pentagon. Because the CIA has its own Air Force, you know that. It has its own armed militia, and that is not even counting the forces that the proxy forces, the militia and mercenary forces that they have all over the world. And he said you don't have to coordinate or get clearance from the Pentagon to go out and kill poor people anywhere in the world that you deem necessary. So Trump is, I mean, if Trump keeps this pace up, maybe he will match and surpass Obama's body count. But he has to. He's got to kill at least twice as many as Obama killed because he said Obama was wimpy. So if the wimpy dude kills 1.5 million, you got to do 3 million, right? Of civilian deaths. But, and I said all that to say, I went all the way down that rabbit hole just to say that I've never heard anybody to this point look at Obama and these white men kill and say, the white man. So one brother goes on a rampage kill and black men, this black man, that black man, which is fine, which is legitimate. I'll take that. I'll carry whatever burden you want to heap upon my shoulders for what that brother did or is doing or what black men did or doing. We all know, you poor, you black. We all got it. And we even now, you heard a horrendous crime has been committed. Every black person, like, I hope it wasn't black, hope it wasn't black, hope it wasn't black. Hey, but we're oppressed. And when you're oppressed, you know, your individual identity is tied into everybody else. And I don't even really have a problem with that. We is us. Ubuntu. We are. I am because we are. We are because I am. Anyway, that's the Bro Diallo show for today. I'm in a little kind of bad spirits, man. And, you know, seeing the elder lose his life that way, just not a good day for me either, y'all. But anyway, Wednesday is a new day. The lucha will continue. The struggle continues. And we will win without a doubt. Bro Diallo show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680. I'll see y'all Wednesday morning. Peace.